Exodus chapter 1, and we'll read the whole chapter. These are the names of the sons of Israel who went to Egypt with Jacob, each with his family: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin, Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher. The descendants of Jacob numbered 70 in all. Joseph was already in Egypt. Now Joseph and all his brothers and all that generation died, but the Israelites were exceedingly fruitful. They multiplied greatly, increased in numbers, and became so numerous that the land was filled with them. Then a new king, to whom Joseph meant nothing, came to power in Egypt. "Look," he said to his people, "the Israelites have become far too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous. And if war breaks out, they will join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country." So they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor. And they built Pithom and Ramesses as store cities for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites and worked them ruthlessly. They made their lives bitter with harsh labor in brick and mortar and with all kinds of work in the fields. In all their harsh labor, the Egyptians worked them ruthlessly. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, whose names were Shiphrah and Puach, "When you are helping the Hebrew women during childbirth on the delivery stool, if you see that a baby is a boy, kill him. But if it is a girl, let her live." The midwives, however, feared God and did not do what the king of Egypt had told them to do. They let the boys live. Then the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and asked them, "Why have you done this? Why have you let the boys live?" The midwives answered Pharaoh, "Hebrew women are not like Egyptian women. They are vigorous and give birth before the midwives arrive." So God was kind, and the people increased and became even more numerous. And because the midwives feared God, he gave them families of their own. Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people: "Every Hebrew boy that is born, you must throw into the Nile. But let every girl live." There are so many things happening in the world. We hear distressing news. In our own lives, there are many pressures that we feel. And it is easy, isn't it, to feel overwhelmed by all that goes on around us and within us. But as we meet as a church, as God's people, we meet here and remember that he is God, and he is our God. And he has a great purpose for us as his people. His purpose is to have a people for himself, eternally and joyfully with him in glory. And holding on to that hope is so important for us in the midst of the trials and the pressures that we face. One day we will be a people set free entirely from the guilt and the infestation of sin in all its disfiguring and deluding power. No more will we be tempted. No more will we have wrong thoughts. We will be able to worship God fully and beautifully. Instead of self-centeredness and autonomy, there will be delight in God and humble worship. And so, God calls people. He calls people to himself. Way back, some 4,000 years ago, this was a call to go, and it was a call to be. There are two parts to God's call. Abraham was called to leave his own people, to go to the land that God would show him. And then Abraham was called to become a great nation, to be that family of God. He was going to be a great blessing. Through him, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. And now, here in the book of Exodus, the descendants of Abraham are called to do the same. They too are called to leave and to become. They're to go out of Egypt and they're to become that nation in the land, the promised land. And just as Abraham and people of Israel in Egypt were called to go and to be, so are we. We're called to be separate from the world and to become God's people, to belong to him. We live in a churning sea of ideas, of people seeking to carve out their own meaning. This one calls out, "Look at me." Another says, "Be my follower. Subscribe to my channel." And as Christians, we've said no. We follow Jesus Christ. We're no one else's follower. His call rises above every other call. We're called to go, to leave, and to be, to become. To become that people of God, heading for that glorious home of heaven. But when we do leave, and when we do start to become that blessing that God intends us to be, the opposition begins. And this too is the story of Exodus. It's a story of a great conflict between God's people and Pharaoh and his people. It's the story of a conflict between God and his will and Satan and Satan's power. And it's the story that we go through as we leave this world and its values and we become the people of God following Jesus Christ. God calls his people to go. And God calls us to become. But Egypt resists. "Who is the Lord that I should obey him?" Pharaoh will say. Will Israel listen? Will they listen to Moses, to God's word through that prophet? Or will they listen to Pharaoh? So these are the themes that this book of Exodus have. And I hope you can see how relevant it is for us. We're going to see in this chapter, first chapter of Exodus, firstly, how God blesses his people. That's our first heading. God blesses his people. The book begins with a list of the children of Jacob, sons of Israel, who went into Egypt. 11 of them, because Joseph was already in Egypt. If you remember the story of how he went there, sent by his brothers, sold as a slave. But in Egypt, God raised Joseph up in order to save the people during that severe famine that affected the whole of that part of the world. Jacob and his sons went down to Egypt because that was the only place where there was food. They were saved alive. But the children of Israel stayed in Egypt. Actually, God told them to stay. God had told Jacob to go to Egypt, to remain there. You may remember that back in Genesis, God had told Abraham that his descendants would be enslaved in a nation not theirs for 400 years. This was all part of God's plan. But God blessed them in Egypt. Look at verses 6 and 7. "Now Joseph and all his brothers and all that generation died, but the Israelites were exceedingly fruitful. They multiplied greatly, increased in numbers, and became so numerous that the land was filled with them." Now these words echo other words that we've heard and read in Genesis. Firstly, at creation, God blessed mankind and told them to be fruitful and increase. Then after the flood, when God blessed Noah and his sons, he told them to be fruitful and increase. And then in chapter 9, when God called Abraham, he promised to bless him and make him fruitful. And this is exactly what is happening here. The Israelites were exceedingly fruitful. They multiplied greatly and increased. And so what we see here in verse 7 is that God is fulfilling his promise. When they were few in number in Canaan, God protected Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now they have become so numerous that the land of Egypt is filled with them. Now, how did that happen? Were they harder working people? Maybe. Were they healthier people? Maybe. Were they more adaptable to changing situations than the Egyptians were? Maybe. We just don't know. We're not told. But however it happened, it was God's doing. It was God fulfilling his promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, Israel was not blessed because they were better than the Egyptians. This point is made throughout the Old Testament. It was because God chose to love them. God had made a promise. God set them apart. God blessed them. He blessed them because he said he would bless them. And that's such an important point for the people of Israel to grasp. Firstly, it will mean they will not boast or think that they have achieved this success. And secondly, it means they will trust God. Through all that they're going to go through, if they've grasped that the way they increased was because of God's blessing, because of God's faithfulness to his promise, that will encourage them to go on trusting God, even when the going gets tough. Now, of course, in all this, they weren't just passive. They had to work. They had to raise their children. But it was obvious that God gave them the increase. And you know, it's exactly the same reason why the Church of Jesus Christ still exists today and why it's growing across the world. When you consider in the church down the centuries, the heresies that have afflicted the church down the centuries, the sinful behavior that has been rife, really, the church ought to have died out. Frankly, there's no human explanation for why there are Christians across the whole world. The only explanation is that God has been faithful to his promise. God keeps saving people. God keeps raising new leaders who bring people back to his word. It's not because we are any better than others. It's not because we are harder working or more intelligent, or because somehow, I don't know what. It's simply because God chooses to bless his people. So let's not think highly of ourselves, but let us trust in God, who will do what he has promised. The church will never be stamped out. And we'll see this here in Exodus chapter 1. God will do what he has promised. God blesses his people. Secondly, the world opposes God's people. A new king arose, or a new pharaoh. And this pharaoh did not know Joseph. All that Joseph had done to save the Egyptians in that severe famine, all of that was forgotten. Now, undoubtedly, there would have been records. You know, we can still, I can't read hieroglyphics, but whatever they're called, hieroglyphics. But they did keep their records, didn't they? If this pharaoh had wanted to, he could have found out about, well, who are these Israelites? What, why are they going on here? But the Israelites were no longer seen as a blessing by the Egyptians. Rather, they were feared as a threat. Look at verses 9 and 10. Look, the king said to his people, the Israelites have become far too numerous for us. Come, we must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous. And if war breaks out, they will join our enemies, fight against us, and leave the country. Pharaoh could see that the Israelites were prospering. They were continuing to grow. They were filling the whole land. Evidently, he does see that they are good for the country, because he's worried that they might leave. But really, he ought to have made some effort to find out their history. Most of all, to find out about the God whom they worshipped, who was blessing them so richly. But instead, out of fear, he plots to suppress them. Now, let's just pause for a moment here and see some parallels with our own time. Because we too live at a time, at least in the West, where people largely have forgotten the good that God's people have done. I used to be in healthcare. I read a bit about some of the history of healthcare. And who was it who started those first hospitals in Europe? It was Christians. History of education. Who was it who first started to teach people, who first had children that they be educated? It was Christians. Monks, monasteries. The social reforms, particularly of the 19th century, almost invariably, they're headed up by Christians. Care for the downtrodden. Rights for children, so they won't be made to work down the mines and so on. Who is it who cares for them? So often, Christianity has been the leading light in these reforms and improvements. But that has largely been forgotten. Who was it who spearheaded the ending of the slave trade? What was his name? Wilberforce. And who was helping him? People like John Newton. Christians. I'm not saying it was only Christians, but so often it was Christians who spearheaded those changes. But it's been forgotten. And Christianity today is portrayed as bigoted and oppressive. Something to be feared. It's a point that we get across here, don't we? The people of Egypt were afraid of the Israelites. And Christianity is portrayed as something that we need to be afraid of. And yet it's been Christianity that has brought those values of honesty, respect, toleration, faithfulness. These days it's portrayed as bigoted, oppressive. Therefore, something to be opposed, silenced, and made to suffer. And so Pharaoh tries to suppress the Israelites with increasing severity. Did you notice the kind of three phases that this chapter goes through? Firstly, he enslaves them. He puts slave masters over the people of Israel, treating them harshly. Verse 14. They made their lives bitter with harsh labor in brick and mortar and with all kinds of work in the fields. In all their harsh labor, the Egyptians worked them ruthlessly. They weren't giving them nicely paid jobs to work like this. No, they were enslaving them. They weren't paying them. They worked them ruthlessly. They beat them if they didn't work. Then secondly, he tried to kill all their male offspring. He called the midwives, or at least that these two chief midwives. Clearly, they are not the only midwives. I mean, they would have been incredibly busy. No wonder they. But these are the chief midwives who oversaw all the other midwives amongst the Israelites or Hebrew women. And he called them. And he said, "You're to kill any baby that's male." Of course, this is going to be fairly quiet. Soon it will be realized, but, you know, in the... says verse 16, "When you are helping the Hebrew women during childbirth on the delivery stool, if you see that the baby, kill him. If it's a girl, let her live." an awful thing. Midwives who are there to bring new life into the world, to help that, being told to kill the baby boys. How awful is that? And the third phase, he orders his own people to start killing off the baby boys. Verse 22, then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people, every Hebrew boy that is born, you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live. Get rid of all the males, and you got rid of the nation. The girls would be married off to Egyptian men, and suddenly there's no distinction. The Israelites have become assimilated, no longer a people to be feared. You know, across the world, thousands of Christians are killed for their faith every year. On Wednesday, the 18th this week, Open Doors will be presenting its new World Watch List for 2023 in the Houses of Parliament. You can invite your MP to go along to that. Just go to the Open Doors website. And a good number of MPs do go, obviously not all of them, but they go along. And they're told about how Christians across the world are being persecuted. Literally thousands every year are killed simply because they believe in Jesus. Thankfully, it's nothing like that here. And yet, in principle, there are similarities in the UK to what was happening back in Egypt all those years ago. Economically, we're not enslaved. We don't have taskmasters who are beating us and forcing us to work for no pay. But Christians can be affected economically. If you take a stand on your conscience because you're a Christian in your place of work, you may be risking your livelihood. And with our children, not killing our children off. On their lives, but it is on their minds. There's a battle for the hearts and minds of our children. What Christian parents tell their children is actively undermined by the godless ideologies of our age. Make no mistake, there's a battle. There is opposition. The world opposes God's people. But there's a third point. God blesses his people even more. We've seen that God blesses his people. We've seen that the world opposes God's people. But thirdly, God blesses his people even more. You see, we might throw up our hands in despair, dreading how it will all end. But can I encourage you to look again at this chapter? There is a God in heaven who still blesses his people. You see, after the first attack, the enslaving of the people of Israel, just look at what God did, verse 12. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites. It's long been observed in the history of the church that when the persecution begins, the church really starts to grow. There's that phrase, isn't there? The blood of the martyrs is what? The seed of the church. History shall end again. That doesn't mean necessarily every single part of the world where there's been persecution, you have a large thriving church. But overall, this is the response. A place like North Korea. You know, if you tell your husband or wife or your children that you're a Christian, you'll be at risk of being put into a labor camp. It's the most oppressive regime imaginable. And yet, the gospel is spreading in that country. It's just astonishing. Think of a country like Iran. You'll be put to death if you're a Christian, actively seeking to evangelize. And yet there are thousands of people becoming Christians in the country of Iran. And Iranians who have fled their country in the West, so many of them are becoming Christians. Verse 12. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. After the next attack, look at what the midwives did. These midwives feared God. They're not going to kill the baby boys. They fear God rather than the tyrant Pharaoh. Verse 17. The midwives, however, feared God and did not do what the king of Egypt had told them to do. They let their boys live. That didn't work. After the third attack, where Pharaoh orders that all the people of Egypt should be looking out for baby boys. If they find a baby boy from amongst the Israelites, drown him in the river. Well, we haven't come to chapter 2 yet. But who is it that saves a baby boy in the river? It's Pharaoh's daughter. Bit of irony, isn't it? Now, when God blesses his people, it isn't all plain sailing. It's tough for those Christians in North Korea. And the lives of the Israelites become bitter with the harsh labor as they're enslaved. The midwives are under huge pressure to do what Pharaoh has said. It looks bleak. But what is happening here is that God is drawing the lines for a great showdown. People of Israel don't yet know this. As far as they're concerned, everything's going badly. Yes, their families might be increasing, but it all seems so bleak. But God is drawing the lines. You see, the Egyptians are being seen for what they really are. Cruel, even to the point of killing babies. And yet the Israelites are still increasing, in spite of all this opposition. And we know that the outcome will be complete freedom for the people of Israel, and will be destruction of Egypt. And it's the same for us as God's people here and now. Our lives are made difficult by the world. There's no point pretending otherwise. And we may be called midwives to take a stand at work, at school, in our neighborhood. We may be called to take a stand for what is right. But we, like Abraham, as we obey God's call to go and to become, to leave the world and to be God's people, will know his blessing. We live by faith. We're assured of that glorious outcome, when we will be God's people with him on the new earth. That is the blessing that we look for. We're not looking for health here and now. We're not living for wealth here and now. We're not living for happiness and comfort here and now. That may come as a surprise to you. The Christian's aim in life is not to be happy. The Christian's aim in life is to please God, to be holy. We set our hearts on what is above, on what is to come, on our true home in heaven. We long for the appearing of Jesus Christ, when he will deliver us from all that is evil and take us home to himself. That's the promise that we hold on to. There's no promise that you'll be wealthy or healthy or have a happy life. That's not what God offers. He offers something far more than that. And I wonder, you young people, what is it that you're aiming for in life? Forget it. Don't make that your aim. You'll only be disappointed. Aim higher, much higher. Aim for what you were created. You were created to know God, to love God and be loved by Him. You adults, you drifted away from that. Have the attractions of the world or the pressures of life pulled you away from this great hope? Is it comfort and happiness that you're really after? Or is it God Himself? Is it the glory to come? The oppression is there. And the only way to be happy in the world is to become like the world. You don't want to do that, do you? So don't look for the happiness. Look for God. Live for Him. And that is true joy. Let's pray.